In February 2021, the Biden administration began the process to unwind the Migrant Protection Protocols policy, also known as Remain in Mexico. At the South Texas border, the program had pushed thousands of migrants into a makeshift refugee encampment in Matamoros, Mexico. In the 10 days following an announcement to close the encampment, the United Nations began a humanitarian operation that unified the efforts of residents of the encampment, U.S.-based grassroots advocates, and local attorneys to safely process everyone into the United States. I am Laura Peña, attorney, advocate, born and raised in the Rio Grande Valley, and I'll be your guide as we journey through Valle de Sueños, Valley of Dreams. I want to start off by thanking our listeners. I'm just so sorry for keeping you hanging. So many beautiful and heart-wrenching stories have come out through this show, and they deserve to be honored with a proper ending. Despite wanting to finish this podcast last year, life just happened for me and Charlie. There's a spinoff of a Yiddish proverb, "If you want to make God laugh, tell him about your plans." Well, God or Allah or the universe or whatever divine being was certainly laughing at our plans that just seemed to slip out of our hands every time we had a good grip. On top of the regular challenges as an immigration attorney on the border, I have spent the last 2 years struggling on a fertility journey. Charlie, a phenomenal source of creative energy in the valley, has had his own personal priorities to center his well-being. Sometimes life just happens. The famous novelist Paulo Coelho wrote, "When we least expect it, life sets us a challenge to test our courage and willingness to change. At such a moment, there is no point in pretending that nothing has happened or in saying that we are not ready yet. The challenge will not wait. Life does not look back." Life really doesn't look back, so I am looking ahead to 2024. And despite the clear challenges in the realm of immigration, I remain optimistic and defiantly hopeful. So today, I am closing out the Valle de Sueños podcast with a summary of our story about the 2021 refugee encampment closure in Matamoros. Then I will offer a brief analysis of the current state of immigration as of early 2024. And I'll end with what's next for Valle de Sueños. The final days of the camp closure were chaotic. The Biden administration agreed to a limited process of reopening the cases that had been closed, the cases of Los Olvidados discussed in the last episode. Antonio, Daisy, and many others were awaiting the decision and refusing to depart the camp despite the dire conditions. A group of lawyers accompanied by UN officials set up a day clinic in the camp to prepare motions to reopen, which is a request to the Immigration Court for a case to be reconsidered after closure. The government had decided not to oppose these motions, which typically means the court is more likely to grant them. By day 9, the motions had been prepared and needed to be filed with the Immigration Court. Yet things got even more dangerous inside the encampment. That's when a higher UN refugee official contacted us. She asked if we could help convince the remaining residents of the camp to leave and relocate to a temporary shelter. It was just too dangerous. The residents of the camp were skeptical of the UN officials, and they were having limited success being able to facilitate a move with their full cooperation. Jody Goodwin was the attorney and most well-known and trusted inside the encampment. She agreed to be the messenger, although I'm pretty sure she would make a different decision if she were asked again today. Jody, Angel, and some other advocates visited the encampment on day 10 and gave them their pitch. The motions pending with the court still needed time to be decided upon. While there is no guarantee that the court would approve the motions, we had been assured that these cases were a priority for quick decision. The residents of the encampment agreed to relocate, but on their terms. First, they wanted issuance of wristbands that would indicate they were residents of the encampment. I thought that was a really smart and creative move. In a sea of migrants awaiting in Mexican border towns, they would have a concrete way to stand out. The second demand was that they would leave only if they could all go to one location together. After all they had been through, the idea of separating was just too much. On day 10, the Matamoros encampment officially closed, at least for the time being. Approximately 60 people relocated to a converted gym at Pastor Abraham's church. As the days passed, we began receiving decisions of people's cases being reopened. Daisy, Antonio, Cindy were all processed into the United States. But some people were not so fortunate. Daniel from episode 1 was never approved to reunify with his family. The migrant protection protocols officially ended once under the Biden administration. However, litigation successfully forced the Biden administration to restart it, and a second version of the program was in effect for a period of time. Finally, the courts allowed the administration to end the program, although the harm to several thousands of migrants and asylum seekers had already been done. Some attorneys continue to seek justice for these harms in the courts, but those efforts are an uphill battle. Such is the immigration system and the people trying to navigate it. Justice feels illusory and access to a fair process so far out of reach. The system is harsh, often random, and built upon the principles of exclusion, deterrence, and racism. And yet we say that the U.S. is a nation of immigrants. This is a challenging assertion. First, Native Americans never immigrated anywhere. Second, Black Africans were forcibly moved to the Americas under slavery. And so who were those immigrants at our nation's founding? Primarily white Anglo-Saxon Protestants and in other parts of the Americas, white Catholics. Our immigration laws have been fueled by this fear, commonly known as the Great Replacement Theory. It's the idea that people of color or foreigners will take over the United States via immigration, that they'll start having babies, reproducing, and then seize political power. This is not a new theory. It was a basis for the Holocaust and reflects the history of U.S. immigration law. The first significant federal immigration law in the U.S. was the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882. It banned immigration of Chinese nationals and restricted U.S. citizenship of Chinese immigrants in the U.S. The law fueled hate and violence against Chinese communities, leaving people dead in states like Wyoming and Idaho. Here's the real kicker. The law was set to be in effect for 10 years. It remained in effect and even more restricted for nearly 80 years. It wasn't until major immigration reform of 1965 that immigration from China was restored. 80 years. It may be true that life doesn't look back, as Paulo Coelho said, but history does repeat itself. In my view, we are in a similar place as our nation was back in the late 1800s. The drumbeat of invasion at our southernmost border is at a deafening level. And there's a human cost. Last month, a mother and her two children died crossing the river near Eagle Pass, Texas. The Federal Border Patrol agent stated in an emergency filing to the Supreme Court that they didn't have full access to the river to perform their rescue mission, that their access had been blocked by the Texas State National Guard. To date, Governor Abbott has refused federal agents access to the river, narrowly interpreting the Supreme Court's decision to only allow agents to cut barbed wire when necessary. When somebody is drowning, the time it takes to cut through 3 feet of razor wire is the difference between a successful mission to save a life and a failed one. But saving lives is not the point. Governor Abbott and 13 other governors held a press conference repeating states' rights to defend themselves against an invasion. This rhetoric is derived from the Great Replacement Theory, driven by fear of the other. Later next month, a new state immigration law, SB4, is set to go into effect unless it's halted by the courts. This law will authorize Texas peace officers to become immigration agents and empowers Texas judges to issue deportation orders. The law represents a direct challenge by Texas against the federal government as to whether immigration is under the full purview of Congress. I will also say that these fears, while directed at foreigners and mainly Black and Latinx people, these fears are also colorblind. I recently overheard a Puerto Rican from New York rail against illegal aliens bringing crime to his city. I've had a challenging conversation with a Black Uber driver about his views on the border. Here in South Texas, there are plenty of self-proclaimed Mexican rednecks or just conservative Hispanics who spout similar fears. But that's the thing about America's version of white supremacy. It creeps into the hearts and minds of all people it touches. As we enter the presidential election year, these fears are being preyed upon to secure political points and votes. And the drumbeat will only increase as we get closer to November. In Washington, Congress is susceptible to this political influence as well. A bipartisan bill in the Senate with several restrictive measures on the border, including a mandatory shutdown at trigger levels, was scoffed at by Donald Trump and House leadership. At the same time, an impeachment effort of Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas failed to get a sufficient number of votes from the full House and is set for a second vote as of the time of this recording. The funding and functioning of our entire federal government seems to hinge on extreme immigration measures. Now, for us regular folks just trying to sort out what is happening, how can we tell the difference between fact and political theater? What is really going on at the border? Here are a few of my views based on my experience. First of all, the border is not open. For all the people crossing the river, they are apprehended, jailed for a period of time, and then families and unaccompanied children are issued a sort of summons to appear in immigration court. Others are detained for longer periods of time and undergo a strict new asylum screening process that is very difficult to overcome. It typically results in a fast-track deportation. Second, the numbers are high but not unprecedented. Over 20 years ago, in the year 2000, Homeland Security reported about 1.7 million apprehensions at the border. However, at that time, many people crossed undetected, and experts say that number is closer to 2 million. For fiscal year 2023, the numbers of migrants encountered at the southern border are at about 2.5 million. Now, these numbers include people who are lawfully presenting at bridges and ports of entry, seeking admission and processed by immigration agents. For people not presenting at ports of entry and crossing the river or making the dangerous trek across the desert, that population has also changed over the last 3 years. In 2020, 90% of those people were from Mexico, El Salvador, Guatemala, or Honduras. This past year, those nationalities make up about 51% of the population, and 49% are from other countries. This is a reminder of the shift in migration global patterns. There's increases of migrants from Venezuela, Colombia, and other countries such as Russia, China, Haiti, and other diverse nationalities. So, yeah, the numbers are high, but we, A, know who these people are, and they are entitled to due process in immigration court because that's the law. B, about 500,000 of these people are following the limited procedures at ports of entry by securing appointments. And C, limited asylum access has resulted in a higher number of fast-track deportations and a severe restriction of access to asylum. Finally, most migrants and asylum seekers I speak with don't want to come to the U.S., but they feel like they have no other choice. Even in El Salvador, where the president has suspended rule of law to initiate a gang purge, young boys and men are fleeing in droves because they are being swept up in widespread arbitrary arrests and detention. One woman from Venezuela told me that her favorite food is mangoes. In Venezuela, mangoes used to grow everywhere, she told me. But then, as widespread poverty set in across the country, all that was left to eat were mangoes from her backyard. And when that tree stopped producing, there weren't even mangoes left to eat. These are not simple answers, but we live in a complex world where many countries are seeing a backlash against migration and refugees. But this is where we are at. We're at a precipice of state versus federal showdown, both at the border and in the courts. There's an unpredictable presidential election looming large every day with immigration at the forefront. And the rule of law seems to backslide a bit more and more each day. So, how do I stay defiantly optimistic? To quote from civil rights hero and Chinese American activist Grace Lee Boggs, it is a time of deep change, not just of social structure and economy, but also of ourselves. If we want to see change in our lives, we have to change things ourselves. I can't wave a magic wand and change the immigration system, but I can link arms with others and make a difference daily to defend liberty and justice at the border. I find joy in hearing children's laughter while I work with a parent on an application. I find meaning in helping an 82-year-old woman fulfill her dream of returning to her home country lawfully to see her children for the first time in 30 years. Bit by bit, we can change the course of people's lives while striving for positive change that centers human dignity and rejects human suffering. That's why Valle de Sueños will be engaging in a new adventure for positive change. Sign up on my website to be the first to learn about an exciting journey later this year. The project will focus on highlighting history and stories on the border, starting right here alongside the river in Brownsville, Texas. It will require you to put on your sneakers or boots or chanclas and do some walking. Because, friends, there's beauty all around us. Thank you for your time. Thank you for listening. Much peace and love to everyone. Valle de Sueños is produced by Selena Peña, Charlie Vela, and me. Made in partnership with Trucha RGV. Edited and original theme composed by Charlie Vela. Written and hosted by me, Laura Peña. With artwork by Monica Lugo. Music in this episode is courtesy of Epidemic Sound. For a full track listing, check the show notes. For more information about Valle de Sueños, please visit us online at vallesueños.com with a regular.